is an interview with Harry Kalish, K-A-L-I-S-H, former chairman of the Department of Psychology at Stony Brook, March 22nd, 87, at his home on Clower Creek Road, which is within the same condominium area as Pelican Point Drive, with Weisinger and Eisenbud.
Alex Harmon used to keep copious notes of meetings and everything, and I think he kept them in notebooks, and I'm sure he hasn't thrown them away.
All right. Well, I've talked to Alec on the phone, and he said he'd be willing to see me. I'll have to wait till I get back. And then he's not happy about the way things are going at Stony Brook.
No, very few people are, actually. Yeah. We've heard I think some sad things. People, they're losing a lot of good people.
Yeah.
I think that's bad.
Right. Gary Schubel is active. I think he's a leader. We'll see what happens.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, I remember Jerry. He's a very good administrator.
Yeah. All right. You want to get started on the questions?
Okay.
Then after we get through with the questions, you can freewheel.
All right. You want me to start with the...
Yes.
But okay.
The specifics.
All right. Well, my name is Harry. I came from the Department of Psychology, and I was chairman of the department for 10 years. I was a vice president for liberal studies pro tem for about 3 years, went back to the Department of Psychology, and then was again chairman for 2 years, and resigned the chairmanship after the second year, and retired, I think, shortly thereafter, about 2 years after that.
What was the year that you retired? Do you remember?
Officially, I retired in 1985, I believe, the summer of 1985.
And when did you come to Stony Brook?
I came to Stony Brook in September of 1961. We were still at Oyster Bay.
Yeah.
That was the last year at Oyster Bay. I was the first and only member of the Department of Psychology.
I remember that you were doing some work with pigeons.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And where were you before you came to Stony
Brook? At Adelphi. I was associate professor at Adelphi. And I'm both a clinical and experimental psychologist, so I was doing work in both clinical and experimental. I was, at the time, I believe, about 40 years old, to answer the question number two.
Right.
Now, question number four is an odd one, because a friend of mine at Adelphi was approached and offered the chairmanship at Stony Brook, and he decided he simply wasn't up to it, so he told them, or recommended that they contact me. It looked like an excellent opportunity to build a department, and so I believe it was Olson who ultimately hired me. I saw a lot of other people, but what was the sociologist's name? I forget the... but anyway, he interviewed me in New York. I'll remember his name. Melly will, I'm sure. Invited me to come to meet Olson and the members of the social sciences group.
Ben Nelson,
yes. Precisely.
Right.
And I was ultimately appointed, and it was that year that, the year I came, that they disbanded the divisions and created departments, and that was the year that our first president,
John Lee,
yes, was appointed, and then that is the year of the strife.
Do you want to say something about the strike while you're there?
Well, it's, you know, it's hard to say how it all got think, first of all, getting rid of the divisions ruffled the feathers of a lot of people who believed in the division.
Yeah.
For my part, I was very happy that that's the case, because I was now an independent agent in psychology, and I could build a psychology department pretty much without having to consult other members of the division of social sciences. I suspect a selfish attitude, but I was pretty confident in the kinds of things I wanted to do. And fortunately, I was able to do them. I guess what I was introducing a fairly new approach to the whole business of psychology, which was there were only two places in the country that were doing this. It was Stanford and Illinois, and I decided that, having come out of behavioral background, this is the kind of thing I wanted to do, and I was able to do.
Where did you do your graduate work?
At Iowa, University of Iowa.
Iowa?
Yes.
Iowa City.
In Iowa City, that's right.
I was doing the Cornell College.
Yes, I know. I remember. You're telling me that. Yes.
Okay.
Now, why did I come? Oh, who interviewed me? Well, of course, Olson interviewed me, and ultimately I was appointed by Olson. Why did I come? I think perhaps the most important thing was that I really saw the opportunity for a graduate department. I was really interested primarily in graduate work at that time, of course. In a graduate department, pretty close to the kind of thing that I wanted, which was following the behavioral approach to a very great extent. Let me see. The factors, of course, that were most important in my decision were New York's venture into higher education. I thought this was a real grand opportunity because they had never done this before. And also because of the, in a new institution, the amount of freedom that I had to create the kinds of things I wanted to do. My understanding of the purposes behind the creation of Stony Brook, primarily that New York decided, Rockefeller, I guess, decided that New York really needed public higher education. It had never had anything except the teachers' colleges upstate and a few contract colleges and the medical schools. And I thought to myself, I was in full agreement with this, having come from a land-grant institution anyway, and knowing that I think one of the most important things that could happen to any state is the expansion of its higher education, public higher education. I think that we have very good private institutions in New York.
For that reason, New York was the last state to...
Precisely because of Columbia. Cornell, Syracuse, and the rest of these places, which were excellent institutions. And it's really a wonder that the State University of New York survived at all, in a sense. But I think that was an indication, really, of the urgency for public higher education, that it got so many good people, good students as well, to come. I think that was the vision. Primarily, and that was certainly transformed into reality. Well, what shall I say about number eight? Give me my impressions of Stony Brook when I first came. It was like a frontier town, I suppose. I was a little apprehensive being at Oyster Bay, a little apprehensive about whether or not the plans were really going to materialize. The strife did not ease my mind about that.
Did you know when you came that the Stony Brook campus was being prepared and that there were plans to leave Lanning Field?
Yes. I knew because somebody had showed me, as a matter of fact, a scale model of the buildings. I wasn't impressed by the buildings themselves, but the thing that was really, overriding factor in my decision was the future, and I one had to really look to the future. I loved being out in Stony Brook. I loved being initially. Of course, you were part of that scene, so you know what transpired. But you know, throughout all of that, it's amazing how people in all of the departments really kept faith. They, and everybody believed that it was going to happen. And I think that was a very good thing. I think that the appointment of John Toll was perhaps the best thing that ever happened to Stony Brook. There is no question about that in my mind. As much grousing as we have done about him and about his methods, I don't think anybody with less dedication than he had to building a university could have accomplished what he did. He was an amazing person in that respect.
Right.
And not fully appreciated, I think, then. As he is now, yes. Well, I mean, there were a lot of people. I sort of blew hot and cold, I must confess, on John. In retrospect, and it's always in retrospect, that these men begin to show what really capable people they were. And I think John...
Who was that, John?
Well, I mean, Sid Gelber, of course. Herb Weissing, although Herb came a little later. Alec Pond, without any doubt in my mind whatsoever. I mean, if anybody single-handedly built that physics department, it was Alec Pond. He was sort of a model for all chairmen. He's confessed that he taught me a great deal. And we were very good friends initially. Tom Irvine, all of the early people who were in leadership positions were remarkable people in that sense, and indefatigable. You really had to be at that time. And I just to throw in something else, I think it's very worthwhile, and the wives as well. Millie, like the rest of the faculty wives, Millie worked and entertained, and you, I don't know whether you recall this or not, as a matter of fact, I have somewhere in my papers, although I can't put my hand on it immediately, but my secretary prepared a year-by-year chronological history of the faculty additions to the department.
To go in the archives.
Well, if you ask the new chairman to look in his files, I think you'll find it there. I'll take a look and send it to you. I just don't want to do it now, because it'll interrupt us. And the reason I mention this, Carl, is because at my retirement dinner, I used this as the basis for a talk to the faculty. And the amazing thing is that in one semester, 1 year, we must have appointed 9 people. Now, that means you have to have seen at least 3 times as many to make a judgment. Now, this is where, and we entertain them at home, mostly. And I say, when I'd call up and say to Millie, I'm bringing somebody home, she was always ready. That's something that ought not to be overlooked.
Well, Anne was willing to entertain also.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's what I say. All the wives were doing this, and the most amazing, in effect, the State University of New York was getting a 2-for-1 kind of appointment. But these are the things I've really, in effect, answered 9 as well. The experiences that stand out in my mind. I think I really have never regretted coming to Stony Brook. In fact, I think it's one of the most exciting experiences a person can have. To build a university, to help build a university, and to be given the opportunity, which is a rare thing, to build a department. And I'm very pleased with what has happened in psychology. I'm very sad about the fact that they're losing people either through retirement or through...
Krasner has gone to Stanford.
Krasner has retired, actually, and he's now not at Stanford in any full-time capacity. He's visiting... No, he's not visiting. He's, well, he has some capacity with the Department of Psychiatry, but not he's not being paid for. We lost yes, I am. I'm in my mind, of course.
Who?
No, we lost a woman, Johnson. Marsha Johnson, we lost to Princeton, which was very flattering, but not very good for a department.
Of course.
No, she was a full professor in cognitive sciences. And as I say, we've walked people through retirement.
Well, you had adequate funds and lines initially.
Yes.
With which to operate.
Yes, I must say the department grew at a fantastic rate. We always had the FTE students to justify the appointment, and since they were all in love with psychology, we had massive numbers of undergraduates, which gave us the opportunity, of course, to put on a lot of people. The administration responded in that way. In fact, John once sent me on a mission to California to see if I couldn't persuade several of the professors at Stanford to join us, which was bizarre in a way, because they were all happy there, except that I almost convinced Estes, who was then one of the most prominent men in cognitive learning, to come to Stony Brook.
Cognitive learning.
I almost convinced him to come to Stony Brook, and really almost had him accept that he was offered a position by Rockefeller, and we couldn't compete with Rockefeller. But I spent a week in California, spent a week in Palo Alto, trying to convince several of the people to come and join us. And that was really one of the admirable things about John. He really was interested in quality and had enough faith in all of us to give us the responsibility of trying to get persuade people to come, these people. Now, what was your understanding of your own place in the future of Stony Brook, and why do you think you were appointed? Well, my understanding of my place in the future of Stony Brook is kind of almost mystical, I guess. I understood that, of course, I was given the charge to build the College of the Department of Psychology, and I took that very, very seriously.
I remember you talking to me about graduate work and the pressure, I guess, from the central office to get into graduate work as rapidly as
yes.
we could, with physics and chemistry already leading the way.
That's right. And they wanted someone in the they wanted a group in the behavioral and social sciences, and we were, because we'd already attracted some very good faculty, we were considered the group that would lead the way in the behavioral and social sciences. And indeed, we had the first graduate program.
Right. Remember Bill McKeachy?
Yes, yes. You brought him in, as a matter of fact. Yes.
Brought him in to talk with you about the program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. And that was good. I was very pleased with the report.
He was, I know him from my Cornell college.
That's right. Now, to follow that up, Carl, this happened somewhat later, but about 3 years after the graduate program was founded, we were also approved by the American Psychological Association. We were given approval for the clinical program, which was a real feather in our hat because it was done very rapidly. But at that same time, a group of psychologists who were studying graduate education in the United States in psychology, I think this was a study authorized by National Science Foundation, named something like 6 universities in the country as potential places, potentially excellent places for graduate study, and we were among them. And I thought that was, I got a letter from, let's see, who was the who was the chancellor of the university before Wharton?
Ernie Boyer.
Ernie Boyer.
Right.
I got a letter from Ernie Boyer, letter of congratulations, which we saved.
Where is that letter?
I think I may have that, and I'll send that along with anything
you
else.
You can send it if you want to keep it. Just copy it.
Oh, no, you can have it. I really have no use for it, and I think it would be better off.
All right.
And, okay. So I have that letter. I'll send you everything that I think is pertinent.
All right.
I just didn't think to go through them, but as I'm talking to you now, I recall these things, and I know that they're in my
file. We need as much documentation.
Okay.
I'm not necessarily going to write the history because I have my own interest in values and valuation.
Mm-hmm.
So structure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, that's right. I remember you were doing that. Then. Thank you, Billy.
You're welcome.
I'm going to just look dangerous.
But, you know, I didn't buy anything, but I did find these at the store, and they look just especially tasty. Honey buns are really nice.
Well, let's see, why do you think you were appointed, which is a very difficult question to answer without being immodest, of course. I think...
Biggest objective is you can't...
I don't really know, except that I had a fairly good research record, and I have published in various places, having gotten grants, and published a paper in Scientific American, which I think people had read. And, and I think perhaps I was terribly enthusiastic about the prospects of building an apartment when I was interviewed, and I think that sort of came across, you know, to the various people.
Right.
And I think that's about all I can say. Because my recruitment was rather odd. I was recruited not by psychologists, but by... Olson was a philosopher, and who's a man who just retired from studying with a political scientist. Who was there at the time, who was dean of the division, as a matter of fact.
Williams?
Right.
Williams.
Jerry Williams, yes. Jerry Williams.
Was he a Chicago man?
Yes, he was also a Chicago man. So there was the... I mean, I didn't mention it. As long as you brought it up, of course, the rift was between Chicago and the rest of the...
Columbia and others, yes.
Yes.
Stan Washcloth, because you can't really stick a gun without wiping your fingers.
Right. But I remember Olson was tilting the place heavily in favor of Chicago.
Well, he was under the gun to get it started.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been at the central office. I think he was an assistant to Carlton.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yes. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, let's see. As to 11, I suppose I can say that the one word I had, the one word that answers that question is great. Mm-hmm. I had great expectations. I think I was very enthusiastic and very happy about coming to Stony Brook.
Did you know any of the people in psychology at the other university centers?
I knew one person, not at the university center. But I may have, I just can't recall whether I did or not. I didn't have much communication with them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. My communication was, I knew one person at Buffalo, only professionally.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the other places are concerned, no, I don't believe I did.
Where did you go This is digression. Where did you draw from in your recruiting?
Well, that's a good question because, as I mentioned initially, there are only two programs in the country that were doing the kind of thing I wanted to do.
Can you describe what the kind of thing was?
Well,
let me begin by saying that
I wanted to build a graduate department. I knew that in order to get good students and good faculty, I had to at first focus on the clinical aspects of the program. Mm-hmm. Because there weren't enough institutions in the United States to handle all of the potential candidates for graduate school in clinical psychology. And I knew that we would not be in great competition with the other really established places if we went into clinical first, because we would get good students. There were plenty to go around. So, and in clinical, I was primarily interested in what was happening in the behavioral areas, not the traditional analytic Rogerian areas, but in the behavioral areas which are focusing on research and the establishment of principles which would ultimately lead to practice, which would ultimately lead to modification procedures. So the first person I went after was Krasner, because he already made a name for himself in the behavioral area.
Right.
He was at Stanford, yes. I have spoken to a friend of mine, you know, who I went to school with, Van Dura, at Stanford. He recommended Krasner, and of course I knew Krasner. He had already published in the behavioral area. And Krasner was the first person I went after seriously to head the clinical group. But I also got Petrinovich. You remember Petrinovich?
Yeah.
He was at Berkeley. And for the experimental area. I began to build both areas at once, knowing that they were both necessary. After that, and Krasner and I agreed on virtually everything. It was a wonderful combination, because I knew he thought exactly as I did. So we had no difficulty then in recruiting the younger members of the department. Stanford, for example, and the two institutions we got people from were primarily Stanford and Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
We had gotten Jerry Davison from Stanford. He was one of the young appointments. And we got Tom Buzarella we got from Illinois. We got a great many people from Illinois. Who are those?
The
O'Learys. The O'Learys came from Illinois, and that was a wonderful appointment. These were all young people coming out of the programs that we wanted to establish anyway, so of course it was just the right thing to do to hire these. But also on the experimental side, we got Marvin Levine from Indiana, who was a rising young star, and I was looking for people like this who wanted to join a faculty where they would have some kind of say in the way in which we built up the clinical part, got approval from the American Psychological Association for clinical work, and then began to build up the experimental as well. And as I say, I had my hand in both areas. I was a clinician as well as an experimentalist. I guess that answers your question.
Yes, thank you.
That's
fine.
Now, my activities were certainly not confined to the Stony Brook campus, being a chairman of a department. I was always called on by John for his pilgrimages to Albany, some of which were rather humorous. I remember one of them, it was about 5 o'clock in the morning. We started about 5 because we had an early meeting in Albany. We were all driving up. I think there were two cars involved. I was driving the first car, and John Toll was in that car. And we were driving along, it was Tom Irvine and Alec Pond and several other people. And we all, none of us had breakfast, and we all wondered when we were going to eat. Finally, John was sitting in the back, and he said to me, "Harry, why don't you pull up and we'll have some breakfast?" And I looked around. I didn't see any diner there or anything that indicated that there was food available. So I pulled up, and he got out of the car, went to the trunk, opened it up, and you remember when Metrical was... he had a piece of Metrical and proceeded to hand them out to various people. But that's an indication of the kind of person he was, you know? He never bothered with such things as eating.
They never really concerned him.
So we went to Albany quite a bit, as a matter of fact. Those were the days in which we were trying to get construction going on campus. So Petrinovich and I had a really intimate hand in planning and building the first building as it stands. Now, of course, it went through about 10 changes, and it doesn't look like anything.
The social plan.